Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybray, and today we're talking about the novel Frozen Charlotte by Alex Bell. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Welcome back to the podcast that everyone is calling Stch.
That's your claim of the week. No one's calling it that.
Maybe they are to themselves. How would we know?
That's true. Well, when I'm on the street and I hear anyone making that noise, I'll assume it's viral marketing Stch. For our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. So we promised creepy dolls at the end of the last episode, and we're delivering on that promise with Frozen Charlotte by Alex Bell, a young adult horror novel from 2015. Here are the creepy dolls.
That's not the end of the episode.
Has a warning.
There you go, promise fulfilled.
Yeah. It says warning, not for younger readers, on the back, because it's quite grisly.
It is. I'm quite tempted to donate this to my school library after we've done the episode, because I like it well enough. I'm not going to reread it, and I do think some of the kids would really enjoy it. But at the same time. Yeah, I don't know. There's some quite violent bits in it.
Yeah, it's quite nasty. It was my pick. I hadn't read it before, but I'd read the sequel or the prequel, Charlotte Says, because that came up on the young adult horror section of my library app, and I thought, oh, this was actually quite scary. We should do it on the podcast. But then I thought we should probably do the first one first. But then the first one isn't as scary as the prequel. So I'm a little bit disappointed.
So what period is the prequel set in?
So the prequel set in, like, the early 20th century, like 1910, like, with, like, the school... Like the schoolgirls who have the creepy dolls.
On the Isle of Skye.
On the Isle of Skye, yeah.
Okay, because that's where the first chapter is set. Of this book.
Yeah. But yeah, it goes back and expands on the schoolgirls who originally had these Frozen Charlotte dolls. And I don't know. I think it was scarier because, not to denigrate this book before we even started talking about it, but I think it was scarier because there was actually more connection with the dolls, with like the girls being the right age to play with the dolls and seeing more firsthand the kind of thrall that they're into the dolls. This one, it's kind of more a remove, I guess.
That makes complete sense to me. So in the prequel, the dolls are more integrated into the girls' lives. Whereas I think in Frozen Charlotte, the dolls do seem quite alien. Like, they have this present in the house, yeah. But their presents, they're, a lot of them are sealed up in a glass cabinet. And then there are other ones that are worn, bits of dolls worn as a necklace around one of the characters' necks. Mm. And dolls in the architecture of the house and also sort of fused or burnt into a tree in the garden. So there are a lot of dolls, and also the main character, Sophie, is an amateur photographer, and there are several sequences in the book where she takes photographs, and then there are kind of phantasmal dolls revealed, like with all their little doll hands at the windows outside. But yeah, there's very little of anyone playing with the dolls.
Yeah, and you kind of get the voices of the dolls being like, let's play a game, kind of thing. But the main protagonists are like 15, so they're not like, I don't know, they're not of an age where they're going to be kind of.
Well, no, they're playing truth or dare, the game that should be banned because. Does anything? Well, I don't know about you, Red. Did you ever play a game of Truth or Dare that filled you with joy and pleasant memories as a kid? Because I don't know if anything positive has ever come out of Truth or Dare. I think it's wholly unpleasant. Like, I only have negative,
just
troublesome memories of Truth or Dare.
The teenage bullying facilitation game.
Yeah. That's literally what it is. And it is upsettingly so in this book. And yeah, it just made me think, yeah, any memory of Truth or Dare I have from childhood is wholly negative. So,
yeah. Yeah. but these creepy dolls, Frozen Charlottes, they're based on a real kind of small China doll that was popular in the Victorian era. The kind of one piece, sort of cheap, usually naked dolls, all painted on faces. You can do an image search of them if you want, and you can see that they are a bit creepy looking. And they're inspired by a real ballad about a girl called Charlotte who refuses to wear a cloak in the coach to a ball and freezes to death. And the lyrics of this ballad appear at the top of each chapter in this book.
I really liked that. It's nice. I didn't know the ballad, so I like to follow the ballad along. And it provides a nice little through line. It's creepy, and I quite like quotes at the start of chapters anyway, so that really worked for me.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that it's a good starting point for a creepy story, for sure. And the kind of question that this book poses is, what if these dolls, but evil? which, you know. So we start at this school in Skye, Isle of Skye, in 1910. And there's a recently blinded girl who's been making ridiculous accusations about how this accident happened, saying that the Frozen Charlottes were involved in. Her school friends are playing with these dolls and holding a little funeral for them. And when the school teacher tells them to stop being ghoulish, they say, "But miss, they like being dead. They told us." and then we move to our protagonist, Sophie, who's in the present day in a cafe with her friend Jay, who pulls out a Ouija board app on his phone. And he's like, "Oh, who should we commune with?" And she says, "Rebecca Craig." It's her dead cousin who lived in Scotland and whose family she's about to go and stay with while her parents are on holiday. So they sort of ask questions, and the app spells out creepy phrases like "black sand," "daddy says never open the gate," and then it repeats "Charlotte is cold," until Jay asks it when he will die, and it says "tonight." And then the app plays this "Fair Charlotte" melody.
Fair Charlotte lived on the mountainside, in a wild and lonely spot. No dwelling was for 3 miles round, except her father's cot. On many a cold and wintry night, young swains were gathered there, for her father kept a social board, and she was very fair.
And the planchette spins around wildly and counts down to zero, and all the lights go out in the cafe. And someone screams horribly, and Sophie thinks she sees someone standing on a cafe table and feels a cold hand around her. But then when the lights come on, Jay's phone is broken, and they see that it was a waitress who was screaming, who's been horribly burnt by the deep fat fryer, which I hate. That's really not... Don't like this.
No, that's really... I forget. Did you watch Twin Peaks The Return?
No, I remember, it sounds like I'm not going to.
Okay, yeah, no, to be fair, I remember you were always a bit iffy about Twin Peaks anyway, to memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're a bit hit and miss with Lynch, which I understand. Yeah, there's a memorable deep fat fryer
incident
towards the end of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, hate it.
Yeah, be safe with deep fat fries.
Things to add to the list of things that should be banned: truth or dare, deep fat fryers. we can keep going.
Oh no, we're gonna have the, you know, GB News complaining about us. See, like the woke brigade, the woke. Podcast, still scared, wants to ban the classic character building game, Truth or Dare.
the delicious chip making appliance.
But yeah, I found this opening sequence very effective, actually. I think it's one of the best set pieces in the book. It is quite disturbing, and I don't know, I like the fact you could say it's lampshading, but I like the fact that they sort of address, like, oh yeah, we're just going to do this Ouija board here at a cafe. Yeah, you don't really need a dark, spooky house, we'll just do it here in the afternoon on a lap. Because have I talked on this podcast about when I went out on a seance with some ghost hunters?
I don't think so.
Okay, so when I was lecturing at Suffolk, I was in charge of professional practice, and basically people would get in contact with the uni to see if students would help make them promotional films, and I'd generally take them up on their offers. It was normally local businesses, and often it would be like, you know, something a bit boring, like the local Manila folder manufacturers or box factory associates, you know. Like, but this time it was some ghost hunters, and I thought I should probably check these people out. Not casting aspersions. I was like, I should probably check out that they're at least... I mean, I don't really know what I mean by legit when it comes to ghost hunters. That at the very least, that they believe they're legit. I guess that, you know, I don't know that. And that the students are going to be okay working with them. So I got in contact with them. They said, okay, well, why don't you come along on one of our ghost hunts at night? And I was like, okay, sure. Because I'd never done that before. And so I accompanied them to beneath the Orwell Bridge. And they had their phones out. And then they basically used, like, spirit sounding board apps on their phones to talk to ghosts. But as far as I understand it, these apps come like pre-programmed with like words and phrases. So I mean, seems quite convenient if a ghost is just like, oh well, I just need to kind of choose the spooky sounding phrases available on this app to communicate. I mean, I think it's fair to say the apps... I mean, I might be misunderstanding, but it felt like the app was doing quite a lot of work for the ghosts.
I went on a bat-detecting walk last night.
I mean, bats are real, to be fair.
But bats are real. But you have bat detectors, and they, like, translate the sounds that bats make and like make them 10 times lower so that you can hear them. You like point it at a bat.
What?
And then the bat makes there.
Did it translate it into English?
No.
Oh, so okay, so it's not like I really fancy some flies.
No. No, but now I'm imagining like what if ghosts were like their sounds are too high for humans to hear, so you have to have like a okay, this might be a short story. No, let's just never mind.
Keep it to yourself, But anyway,
what did the ghosts say?
To be honest, I think they were feeling a bit sorry for themselves. Yeah. Which I understand, they were probably like hoping to reach out to a relative or something, and then they'd just get some random ghost hunters, and they're probably like, oh, okay, I mean, didn't really want to speak to a stranger.
Awkward small talk with
a
ghost.
Yeah, it was a bit awkward small talk. But, you know, they seemed legit enough, so I let a student do their editing, so it worked out fine. So this is what ghost hunters use now, I guess, are these apps. So that all seemed pretty accurate, and I really liked it. I thought it was a really exciting, dramatic scene to set up the novel with.
Yeah, it was good. She was right. Jay did die. Sophie's kind of unsettled by this business, so she's like, Jay, could you like cycle back via the towpath rather than the busy road? And he's like, all right.
Yeah, she's like, Jay, look, it'll be much safer if instead of using the road, you go on the slippery towpath at night.
Slippery, creepy, dark towpath. That's nothing bad has ever happened on a towpath. unfortunately, he tips into the canal and dies. That's the setup. I'm not gonna do the whole plot in such detail, because I will get bored. It's quite a lot of plot, but
it's a very plot heavy. This is a bit different to a lot of the books we talk about, and we've discussed the kind of difference between 80s and early 90s young adult writing and more contemporary young adult writing. Remember talking about how I feel modern young adult writing is clearer, there's less impressionistic and odd. What I find interesting, comparing this to something like The Scarecrows, just because that's the last one we looked at.
I think we've really gone from one pole to another.
Uh-huh, yeah. And what's really interesting is we were talking about how Scarecrows couldn't be published today or wouldn't be in... You know, I think both of us would definitely be on board with some of that being edited if it was republished. But what I found interesting is that The Scarecrows is very explicit with its language, some of which we quoted, some of which we didn't. And there's a kind of nastiness in terms of the sheer level of negativity of the main character's emotions and some of the stuff he says, but also in terms of characters saying things that are racist or misogynist. There's a kind of ugliness there, but then it's quite reserved in terms of the actual violence, right? There are a couple moments of real horror, but in terms of the actual action, it's pretty reserved. Whereas by contrast, in Frozen Charlotte, I don't think anyone swears. For instance, no one sort of really says much that is troubling or offensive. But there's actually some pretty extreme violence, like violence that I found quite shocking. And I find that really interesting, that I felt that the level of violence wouldn't have been seen as appropriate for teenagers back in the 1980s. Like, it's almost, you know, it has almost a video nasty element to it. You know, there are times where it felt like I was reading the plot of, like, something on the video nasties list. but the language is much more careful and much, So I don't know, I found that interesting that maybe what we see as transgressive has kind of shifted and, that you don't have the offensive language, but it is much more violent.
Kind of. I think we've established like an inadequate case study on that with these last two episodes.
Yeah.
It's fairly like blandly written, I think.
Yeah, and I think I do have a tendency to go for texture, I guess, and
yeah, I mean, obviously we're both texture freaks. we like the weird, like chewy, knotty.
Exactly. There's stuff. Not lots of crunchy detail, and I remember one of my film students getting annoyed at me once, probably because of me just disliking Christopher Nolan and all of these filmmakers who are great at plotting, but, you know, just visually, it's all...
Yeah.
It's all freaking glass and metal and concrete. And it's like, you know, I've had so little interest in seeing Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the students love, like, Nolan. And it's like one of them was like, yeah, your taste is just like a child's, basically. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's true. Like, you know, I just want nice colours.
Yeah, so I think we do need to, like, establish this to our listeners, that even though we're both kind of lukewarm on this book, you might love it. We're just weird. So... You need to bear that in mind.
Yeah, because the plotting is really good. It's got loads of plot. I imagine not so many readers would be reading this being like, but where's the weird textures? You know, why aren't there more mushrooms or gristly objects or wax?
You know? Or like strange intensity about turnips.
Yeah. I think that's probably quite a personal preference.
but I will tell you about the plot. I'm sure we can find some odd things to talk about as we go along. But yeah.
Yeah, so Sophie's obviously rather traumatised by the death of her best friend. And it happens to coincide with the summer holiday. I think it's the summer holiday?
Mm.
It's a holiday. Yeah, it is. And her parents have already booked to go on a vacation to America. And she kind of encourages them to go because kind of she feels like she must find out about what happened that prompted this Ouija board experience. So she feels like she did commune with, is it Rebecca?
Yeah, Rebecca.
Yeah, and she feels
and she's
that...
She's going to stay with her cousins. So she's like, well, you know, I have to find out what actually happened. Like, yeah.
How did Rebecca die?
And it's been some time. Yeah, she hasn't seen them since before Rebecca's death. And it kind of... turns out that's not the only tragedy that's like befallen this family in this last 7 years. Like their mother's came mentally ill and is institutionalized, and their older brother Cameron is a talented pianist, but he lost the use of one of his hands in a fire, and the youngest sibling Lilius is Sophie learns kind of on the first night there has such an extreme phobia of bones that she once tried to cut out her own collarbone, which made me draw a little face in the margin of the book, which happened several times. only Piper, the kind of the middle child, the same age as Sophie, seems like a normal, friendly teenager. Or is she?
Or is she?
Yeah. the father, meanwhile, Uncle James, is essentially a non-entity. He kind of reminded me of the other father in Coraline, which we're going to do for episode 100. We decided this at the beginning of the podcast. Then we became a lot slower at making them, but we're over halfway there. So,
yeah. We are going to do Coraline. I mean, I love Coraline. So.
Mm. Yeah,
Recorded it all as an audiobook. Like, it's one of my favourites. But yeah, we've got to do it for a special number, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, this kind of uncle, he's kind of a sort of distracted artist, but he's kind of so thinly sketched, I guess. Not making a pun deliberately, but he's just truly checked out of the narrative and of the lives of his children, apparently.
I don't know if that, how deliberate that was. Like, it sort of works in terms of it then makes us focus on these teenage, well, these younger characters. But at the same time, yeah, it did leave him seeming very kind of thinly sketched, as you said. I like the detail that he paints these paintings of Piper as a mermaid, and then one as some kind of terrible mermaid with fangs or sharp teeth.
Yeah, that's the sort of the only real detail we get about him, that he's done these paintings. I don't know, I found it, I think I might have latched onto it as something that a detail that I found kind of funny in a book that didn't have a lot of details to latch onto, just the complete pumpkinness of the dad. but there's sort of kind of lots of creepy sort of scene setting things happen when Sophie first arrives. You know, she realizes that all the windows are sealed shut with black wax, and the flowers wilt and die on her windowsill in a few hours. And like, she sees a photo of the schoolgirls from 1910, because they're living in this old school building. This is the house that the cousins live in, including the girl with the blindfold who's in this photo. Lilius finds a bone in her steak and is overcome with horror. And Sophie has a nightmare where tiny cold hands are gripping her ankles. And she hears the voice of Dark Tom, which is Piper's African grey parrot, talking in the night, saying such things as,
"Monstrous, monstrous, never do that again. There's blood under the rug."
I don't really know. Is that what parrots...
I think a parrot could sound like that.
Yeah.
I like that the parrot, like, Sophie generally sees this parrot as a sort of horrible bird, and I think there's the sense that Tom, the parrot, is doing all of this stuff just as a wind-up, basically. It's just a trolley parrot.
Yeah, it's a trolley parrot, yeah.
Yeah, which I quite liked.
There's also a cat, Shelley Coate, and some unpleasant details about cruelty to cats that made me sad.
That doesn't surprise me if you did not enjoy the fate of the previous cat.
No. Piper explains that Rebecca had a cruel streak and would kind of do sadistic things and then cry about them afterwards. Piper also takes Sophie on a walk along the cliff edge and shows Sophie the spot where Rebecca died. As you do. You know, she fell off the cliff onto a ledge, then broke her leg and froze to death.
It's probably just the amount I think about The Simpsons, especially now. I say that my stepson is watching all of The Simpsons.
Oh, good choice, George. He's
a true hero. He has, I think, got to, I don't know, 20, I want to say 24, 25. But I did, I have to admit, with Rebecca falling down the cliff, I did think of Homer failing to jump the gorge on the skateboard. and then falling.
Painfully
there. Yeah, that is the image I got of poor Rebecca falling down the cliff.
When you said George was watching all of The Simpsons, I thought, like, oh yeah, up to series 8.
Oh, of course. No.
No, Rad. There's much more Simpsons than
that. I will let you know, okay, that so I asked him what was happening in the episode he'd just been watching when I picked him up today. Apparently, Homer died. And I was like, oh, okay. And then Professor Frink cloned Homer, and the second clone died by eating too much potato salad. And then there was like a third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth clone. They all died. I was like, oh, of course. Is this a Treehouse of Horror episode? Oh, no. No, it's a normal episode. So...
Fine. Good.
Fine. It's apparently, like, post... season 24 or whatever, you're actually watching a clone Homer. There we go.
Wow. Okay. And no one knows this because no one watches these episodes.
Yeah, only George. George's the only person who knows this. Yeah, I mean, I really can't watch later Simpsons because I last about 5 minutes and start feeling intensely sad and have to stop.
Yeah.
You know, George, if he sets himself a project, he will do it. So he is watching all of it.
Yeah. Cool.
Which I quite enjoy. It means I get to hear about all this weird stuff in later Simpsons that I had no idea about.
I mean, I thought like series 12 was weird, but yeah.
No, yeah.
So I'll read a description of these dolls.
Okay.
Made from delicate white porcelain, the frozen Charlottes were stretched out on their backs, completely naked, with short painted curls and a pinkish blush to their death white cheeks. The rosebud lips were little more than a painted red dot, making her dolls look prim and disapproving somehow. Their painted eyes were all different. Some were open, some were closed, and some of the dolls were so faded with age that they didn't look like they had eyes at all. The dolls were very small, some were no bigger than a penny, and most were just a few centimetres long. A lot of them were chipped or broken in some way, missing arms or legs or even heads. Unlike normal dolls, they had no joints, so their limbs couldn't be moved. They were frozen in place, lying on their backs with their arms bent at the elbow, and their hands stuck up in the air like claws reaching for their last dying breath, like little bodies laid out in the morgue. This wasn't Charlotte on the way to her ball. This was Charlotte after she died.
Cute.
And Piper tells Sophie that they found most of them in a lockbox, and the remainder were painted into the plaster of the walls.
Oh, that's my texture of the week. That's my texture of the week. I have to do it now.
Oh, right.
I mean, this might not sound like much, but it's actually part of a cuckoo money box. And if you turn the handle, cuckoo pokes its head out with quite a sharp metal beak and takes the money. I managed to make a toddler laugh at this. Like, my mum kept doing it. She managed to make her laugh about 20 times. yesterday. Just cuckoo's head out. What do you have?
I have a tin of curiously strong mints, an empty tin of curiously strong mints.
Okay.
Texture.
Yeah, so I really like the texture of the dolls painted bumpily into the plaster of the walls. They sort of been plastered in. I like the idea of just little toes and little fingers poking out of the wall.
Yeah, that's good. Mine was actually the dolls burned into the tree. Similar. In the burnt tree, there's a lot of little faces kind of melted in.
Yeah, it's not a densely textured book.
No, not a densely textured book. But where there are interesting textures, it's the dolls and
yes.
their permutations. So yeah, they found them plastered into walls, but they chipped them out so that Rebecca could play with them. Rebecca had one of these dolls with her the night she dies, and Piper keeps it with her, threaded into a necklace, along with the broken china hands and arms of the dolls, which is pretty weird. But Piper's doesn't think it's weird. She's like, "Aren't they cute?" But Lilius comes past the door and she's horrified, saying, "You're not going to let them out, are you?" And they're like, no, we're going to lock them back in the cabinet. Don't worry."
Do you think that Piper's too obviously a wrong'un?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean,
I kind of wanted to be left guessing for longer.
Yeah, it becomes quite clear, like, once... it definitely becomes clear when she has her weird, weird little tea party.
The truth or dare scene?
Sorry?
Oh, the tea
no,
party.
No.
Okay, what happened to the
tea party
again?
So she invites Sophie to a little tea party, and where she's made little lemon cakes and fresh lemonade, and they have it by the burnt tree, and and one of the things that the frozen Charlottes were used for is as ice cubes. And she puts a frozen Charlotte doll in the lemonade as an ice cube, and then it like bites the inside of Sophie's mouth.
That was quite good. Yeah, I quite liked it.
Yeah. I feel like Sophie is maybe a little too credulous of Piper's super sweet act.
Yes, I think the problem is maybe that Sophie is generally depicted as a fairly kind of typical, slightly, not snarky, but slightly cynical teenager. Like, you know, she seems like a pretty accurate teenager, but I feel like for some reason, as you said, like that doesn't seem to apply to Piper, who she seems very easily taken in by.
Yeah, no, I feel like if I was like 15 and there was like some girl who was like, "Let's be best friends, let's have a tea party," I'd be like, "You don't seem very legit."
Yeah. She's much more suspicious at the start of Cameron, who's very much this brooding young man. So it's a
yes.
Byronic teenage boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Because sort of, and Piper starts saying like, "Oh yes, Cameron's very sensitive. He's very moody," kind of things. Like, you know, "Don't worry about what he says," and it kind of starts up this kind of thing where, like, you know, Piper's warning Sophie off Cameron, and then Cameron starts warning Sophie off Piper, and she's not quite sure for a while who's in the right.
And she reveals that Cameron, so Piper's been sneaking off at night with slightly older, rather doltish ruffian of a motorcyclist. And apparently last time they had a run-in, Cameron beat him with a riding crop.
a riding crop. Flogged him with a riding crop.
Yeah.
If you can imagine such a thing, yeah.
Yeah, which it was a bizarre... suddenly reading some sort of gothic Victorian novel, which I quite liked.
Yeah. And this is during the tea party scene, so like... they're having this like weird tea party underneath a burnt out tree, And Piper's like, yes, no, he flogged my boyfriend with a riding crop. And Sophie's like, uh-huh. And then, like, trying to take this in. And then a frozen Charlotte ice cube doll bites her in the inside of her mouth. Like, yeah.
So poor Sophie gets put through it.
Yeah, she does.
Like, she manages to keep her sanity impressively intact, because I would not have lasted nearly as long as she does.
No, She's like, because she's like, you know, got like she turns up on the first night and they're like, oh yes, you know, Rebecca threw our previous cat in the fire, and the little Lilius tried to cut out her own collarbone. right,
Lilius gives her like a creepy children's drawing.
A creepy children's drawing of the family who's been murdered, and the father's like, oh dear.
This again, yeah.
She gets introduced to the resident creepy dolls. She's at the parrot starts
squawking about murdering
people in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Yeah, so Sophie keeps it together a lot longer than I would have done. To be honest.
She even sees Rebecca like having a little frolic outside by the dead tree. But eventually she does. And she kind of hears the voices of the dolls whispering as well, and they were like, "Kiki, let's play again. Let's play for sisters
in your game." I mean, earlier I mentioned this is almost like a video nasty,
yeah.
But actually, if it reminded me of anything, it's probably a Blumhouse horror film. In terms of the kind of beats of it, it makes me think of The Conjuring or Insidious or. One of those kind of films.
Neither of which I've seen, but I'll take your word for it.
I guess they're haunted house movies, really. Or people have called them like ghost train movies. The sort of escalating things that go bump in the night. So you'll get the flickering lights, and then the spooky ghost voice, and then the visitation. You know, it kind of hits all those beats. I do feel like the book feels like a series of set pieces, but some of the set pieces are very good.
Yeah, there's definitely some like kind of, it's like, oh, there's some scenes in between where we have to wander around and do plot things before the next creepy doll event. She like sees the, she's kind of, stakes out the night in Rebecca's room and kind of to try and see Rebecca's ghost, and then she sees all the frozen Charlotte dolls like standing up with their hands pressed against the glass, which is pretty creepy.
And I like that the frozen Charlotte dolls, like little icons of them, are used as chapter dividers.
Oh yeah.
In the middle of chapters in my edition. I think you've got the same book. Like, turn to page 202.
202. Oh, I've just got like a bloody handprint and then small bloody handprints.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so in my one, I've got like little like iconographic frozen Charlottes all holding hands, like painted. Which I really like.
I prefer that. Yeah, that's better. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sort of dividing up. I've got some of the paragraphs.
The frozen Charlottes holding hands on the front, but the dividing things are is a bloody handprint.
Yeah, it's just like the ones in the front, but little.
Oh. All right. Well, there you go. she kind of gets possessed by Rebecca at one point. She's like kind of staying up with her torch pointed at the cabinet, and then she like starts smelling this kind of deathly smells, and then she hears the sort of Fair Charlotte song coming out of her mouth, and yeah, that's when the kind of ghost possesses her, and then like leaves her and runs down the stairs, and that's when she finds like Piper and her boyfriend outside sneaking around having a tryst. What did you think? Did you find it like, were there bits where you were like, "Ooh, scary"? Was it? Did it give you the creeps at all?
Only really the opening séance in the cafe scene.
Okay, yeah.
Which I did find creepy. I think once it was in the house, maybe it just felt a little bit too generic, being in this kind of creepy old Victorian house. The bit when she finds herself kind of frozen in the bathtub.
Yeah,
I found quite creepy. So she takes a bath and then the water freezes around her and she can't raise herself out of the ice.
Yeah, and that's the bit where she's finally like, "Nope, I'm going." She like gets out of this bath and's like, "I need to leave this house right now." But they've only like, Lilius persuades her to stay by like giving her a message from Jay, or from Rebecca, who says, "Oh, Jay says hello," and she's like, "Oh, I guess I need to find out what's going on with Rebecca." So she kind of does a bit of sleuthing. She goes into the town to find the niece of Martha Jones, who was the student who was blinded, and then kind of get some more sort of creepy revelations about what happened to the school in its final years. Kind of, there was like a student, there was a teacher who was pushed down the stairs, and then like a student who jumped from the window, and Sophie asks this woman about the dolls, and she's like, "Oh, well, you know, they're just dolls, but I wouldn't have them in my house, you know." the way my aunt talked about them, it always stayed with me, kind of thing. You do wonder why this family is still living in this house, but I think the dad's just like really likes the clifftop views, I guess. The numerous ills that have befallen his family. Then we get to the kind of camping on the beach with the truth or dare. And this is when sort of Piper's mean side sort of starts to explicitly come out. And Sophie's like, "What?" Even though it seems, yeah, sort of fairly obvious, but she's kind of snidely putting down Sophie to her friends, and then they play truth or dare, and Piper dares her boyfriend Brett to kiss Sophie, which he does, and she's like, "Oh, gross," and then leaves him to it. But then in the middle of the night, they hear screams coming from the boys' tent, and it turns out it's Brett with needles stuck through his eyes. And when Sophie goes to shake out his sleeping bag, there's a frozen Charlotte who's bloodied up to the elbows and grinning, having played her favourite game of all, the stick the needles in the eyes game.
And of course, this has set poor Sophie up to look like she'd have some kind of motive to revenge herself. On Brett.
Yeah, it's kind of simultaneously setting up Sophie and Cameron, I think.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I think Piper's trying to blame Cameron for maiming Brett, because obviously he came at him with the riding crop, as we recall. But Piper's also been setting up Sophie to commit suicide, as well, not to, to frame her as having killed herself.
And so we can at this point just conclude that Piper must be under the thrall of the dolls.
Yeah, one must assume.
And that's definitely what Sophie assumes.
Yeah. yeah, we're kind of reaching the end, and like Sophie kind of chucks all the frozen Charlottes from the cabinet into her empty suitcase and like heads off to the cliff, and she kind of throws it off into the water, and then the ghost Rebecca appears and reveals what actually happened to her, kind of showing Sophie a vision of Rebecca kind of climbed down onto the ledge to rescue our frozen Charlotte doll, but she manages to climb back up, but it's like Piper's there and kind of watching her struggle. And there's this really long kind of brutal description of...
Oh, it is actually quite brutal, because it's longer.
Yeah.
It's like a scene in a film where the take just goes on and on.
And you're like, I don't want to keep watching this. Like,
I found it a bit much, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it is a bit much. It's like Piper kind of tormenting Rebecca as she kind of struggles to get back onto the cliff, and then like kicks her in the face, and then like pelts her with snowballs when she's trying to climb again, and Rebecca breaks her leg, and it's really, really nasty.
It's properly not, and it goes on over quite a lot of pages. It felt like it, definitely. I mean, it's effective, but I don't know.
I did find this book quite odd in that way, of just this kind of combination of feeling fairly bland and then like really kind of intensely nasty at points. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes it interesting in a way, that kind of shift, because as you say, it is quite, bland or pedestrian, I guess, in terms of that there's not lots of vivid writing. It's perfectly decent writing, but it's not like any super memorable sentences. And then, you get these very violent, often quite drawn out, scenes, which are upsetting. Which, I don't know, I mean, it's effectively nasty. It's not really scary or creepy, but that's a kind of discussion about what you want horror to do.
Yeah.
Like, I watched the film Talk to Me recently.
Mm-hmm.
Which recent horror film made by YouTubers, and it's very well done. I didn't find it scary at all. I found it upsetting and uncomfortable. I don't know. I guess if a film's going to do that, I kind of want it to leave me with quite a lot to think about, maybe morally or ethically. If it's kind of just doing that, I don't really get the purpose, because I don't find that fun. So if I'm going to be made to feel, upset or uncomfortable, I'm okay with that potentially, but I kind of want it to be leaving me with something.
Yeah.
And I guess with Frozen Charlotte, personally, I wasn't sure if the themes were kind of deep enough to justify that.
I think that's quite a good way of putting it. Because then, kind of before Rebecca dies, she asks Piper, she's like, is it the Frozen Charlottes who are making you do this? And Piper's like, no.
I'm evil.
I'm the one. I'm evil. And you're like, okay. Right.
And it's not the tulip touch, right?
No.
Because it's something like the tulip touch, you've got the character Tulip who does some really hurtful, harmful, violent things. But the whole book is trying to explore, okay, well, why is a kid doing these things? And ultimately, it makes her a very human figure. You know, she's still an upsetting figure, but she seems like a human figure, whereas... Yeah, Piper is just like, nope, I am evil.
She's just like the scarecrows in the Scarecrows.
Yeah.
She's just made of evil.
And, I mean, I guess occasionally there are people who, really are thoroughly bad, but I don't know. Yeah. I guess I feel like it doesn't often happen personally. Like, I think generally people have their reasons and generally think they're doing the right thing, or at least feel they're justified in what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think it's unusual that someone would just be like, I am evil. And I do evil.
And I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that could be, that could be okay in a horror. I don't know. It was just like, but then what do we do with that?
Yeah. I think it kind of feels a bit too much like it's a twist.
Yeah.
It wasn't the dolls. She's just evil. I'm like, well, okay. But yeah.
And of course the frozen Charlottes are just like, help us, you know, rescue us because they've been thrown off the cliff.
Well, no, because when Piper kind of finds out that the Sophie's thrown the dolls off the cliff, she kind of runs back to the house and then like sets the house on fire.
Right? In a rage.
And they're kind of, you know, Cameron and Sophie have to find Lilius and escape, and the kind of ghostly hand of Rebecca guides their way. But yeah, it turns out like Piper has this knife that she was going to kill Sophie with, and she's ready to kill Cameron. But it sort of turns out that the remaining frozen Charlottes are not happy about being burnt in the house, and the one that Piper keeps around her neck sort of buries its teeth into her flesh, which is again quite funny.
I quite like it. But killed by the evil mouth of a gold necklace. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite good. And sort of. Pumpkin Dad arrives at this point, running through the gate, going, "Oh no, the house is on fire! All my children are about to die."
And sort of says something like, "You know, I knew something like this would happen. I should have done something about it long ago."
Like, yeah, man. Like, what were you doing? And then you kind of get like 6 months later, and like Sophie meets Cameron at her cafe, favorite cafe, and he says that all the family are doing a lot better since Piper has died, and he's finally going away to music college, and Lilius has made a friend, and their mum's getting better. Oh, we didn't mention the evil skeleton actually. Lilius is afraid of bones because Piper told her that there was an evil skeleton that lived inside her.
Oh, well, she probably just showed her that meme that says the skeleton is inside you.
And then like all that remains at the end is this the Jumanji epilogue, where a little girl on a beach finds the washed up suitcase and all these dolls inside that want to be her best friends.
So, which I assumed was then going to be the start of the next book, which you'd read.
Yes.
But you're telling me that that's not the start of the next book.
No, the next book is actually about the little girls in the school, back in the olden times. And I think it works better.
But we didn't do that book.
We didn't do that book.
Maybe we'll do that on a future episode then, because I can see how that works better with that setting or that period.
So how's Frozen Charlotte?
And it seems to be printed by this Red Eye publishers that print young adult horror, as far as I can tell, because in my edition, which seems to be different to yours, but my back page has all these other books. So we've got Charlotte Says, which is presumably the one you read.
That's the next one.
There's also got Savage Island by Bryony Pierce, Flesh and Blood by Simon Cheshire, The Haunting, which is another Alex Bell, Dark Room by Tom Becker, Sleepless by Lou Morgan, Bad Bones by Graham Marks, and Fur by Sharon Gosling. And all of these seem to be children's horror, so...
All right. Well, there's some some material for future episodes, then.
Well, as ever, we're not going to run out. we're not. Like, going to Oxfam, we're going to be doing this forever. Going to Oxfam Books today. They had a couple of Christopher Pike books.
Mm-hmm, who is a, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember reading when I was young. We haven't covered, so...
No, yeah. No, there really is a wealth of material.
Yeah, a lot more than we ever expected.
Yeah. And next time we might have a collaboration of some kind. So
yeah, well,
have a guest on. Yeah,
a guest on, and we're potentially. I like this idea. Ren has suggested that we discuss three different adaptations of the same source material. Each one of us looking at different.
Each watch one. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting. It might be chaos. It might be really chaotic, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
I think that's everything.
Yeah.
It to an hour.
Yeah, and if you're more into plotting than you are description, then I would recommend Frozen Charlotte. Because it is nicely plotted. I'm more interested in weird description and atmosphere than I am in plot.
There is a buffet of options in the Chosen Horror dining hall. Children's horror. What? Never mind.
Okay, do the credits and I'll try to think of a sign off.
Okay. Our intro music's by Maki Yamazaki. Our outro is by Joe Kelly. Our artwork's by Letty Wilson. You can give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or those kind of things. And you can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com. And I've kind of doing the Instagram. I'm still I'm updating the Twitter just to put the latest episode on. But on the Instagram, you get a special treat because I'm doing a collage for each episode. So.
Oh, I don't think I've checked. Did you do one for the scarecrows?
I did.
Yes. Oh, I totally haven't checked yet. Oh, I have to look at that straight up. Awesome.
Well, that's a Still Scared podcast, I believe. I'm going to check. I think it's Still Scared. Yeah, Still Scared podcast is the Instagram. So if you follow us there, you can see a collage for each episode.
Oh, that's great.
Do you have a sign-off for us, Adam?
Yeah, I'd say just leave the evil dolls in the walls, creepy kids.
Yeah. don't get out your little pickaxe. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Also, don't open any weird suitcases you find on the beach. That's just a general rule for life, I think.
Yeah.
Not specifically creepy doll related.
Yeah, it might just be filled up with dead jellyfish.
Yeah. All right. See you later, spooky kids.
Bye.
Bye.